Chapter 11. Within a week of her meeting with Clichy, Jansen's colleagues had started calling her Spooky Jansen. And within a month, she had made an appointment at the home, as Joshua called it. It was an orphanage, a run-down, converted Section 8 apartment complex on Allied Drive, in an area that was about as rough as it got in Madison. But you could see the place was well kept. And there she quietly met, once more, 14-year-old Joshua Valiente. She had sworn that if Joshua dealt through her, she would guarantee that nobody would treat him as a problem, but as somebody who might be able to help out, maybe. You know, like Batman. That was how, for several years after Step Day, Joshua's young life had been shaped.
"That must seem a long time ago to you now," Selina said smoothly, leading Joshua deeper into the Trans-Earth complex.
He didn't reply.
"So, you became a hero. Did you wear a cape?" asked Selina.
Joshua didn't like sarcasm. "I had an oilskin for rainy days."
"Actually, that was a joke."
"I know." Yet another forbidding door opened in front of them. Another corridor was revealed.
"Makes Fort Knox look like a colander, this place, doesn't it?" Selina said nervously.
"Fort Knox is a colander nowadays," said Joshua. "It's just lucky the people can't carry out bars of gold by hand."
She sniffed. "I was merely making a comparison, Joshua."
"Yes, I know."
She halted. The way he'd paused in the middle of that reply was annoying, and even more annoying when what she'd really been trying to express was that, even now, all this business of stepwise worlds could be so frightening. Not to Joshua, it seemed. She forced a brief smile. "This is where I leave you, at least for now. I am not allowed to get too close to Lobsang. Very few people are. I know Lobsang wants to discuss your difficulties with the Congressional Review that's been looking into the outcome of your earlier jaunt into the remote stepwise worlds." She was fishing, of course. Joshua suspected that this was, in fact, the leverage Lobsang hoped to use to recruit him. He said nothing, and she couldn't gauge his reaction. She guided him gently into the room beyond.
"Nice to have met you, face to face, Joshua."
He said, "May I wish you the security rating you desire, Selina?" She stared at the closing door. She was sure that impassive face had broken into a smile. The room within this fortress-like inner sanctum was decorated like the study of an Edwardian gentleman, even down to the log fire blazing in the fireplace. The fire was a fake, however, and not entirely convincing, at least to Joshua, who lit a genuine log fire every night out in the wild. The leather on the chair standing invitingly beside the fire, however, was real.
"Good afternoon, Joshua," said a voice from the air. "I regret that you cannot see me, but in point of fact there is very little of me here to see, and what there is, I feel sure, would be quite dull to observe."
Joshua settled down in the chair. For a time there was silence, almost companionable. Beside him, the fire crackled artificially. You could tell if you listened, because of certain sequences of crackle, that the soundtrack was repeated every 41 seconds. The voice of Lobsang said soothingly,
"I ought to have paid more attention to that. Yes, I mean the fire. Oh, don't worry, Joshua. I'm no mind reader. Not yet. You are glancing at the fire every few seconds, and you have a tendency to move your lips soundlessly when you are counting. Interestingly enough, nobody else has noticed that little flaw with the fire. But of course, Joshua, you do notice. You watch and listen and analyze. And inside that roomy cranium of yours, you play yourself little videos of all the possible outcomes of the current situation that you can envisage. It was once said of an English politician that if you kicked him in the butt, not a muscle would move on his face until he had decided what to do about it. It's one of the qualities that makes you so useful, that watchfulness. And you are not apprehensive, are you? I can detect no fear in you. None whatsoever. I believe this is because you are the only person who has been in this fortress of a room who knows that he could get out at any moment. Why? Because you can step without a stepper box. Oh, yes, I know about that. And without getting nauseous afterwards, too.
Joshua did not rise to that. Selina said you had something to tell me about the Congressional Review?
Yes, the expedition. You got into trouble with that one, didn't you, Joshua?
Look, there are only two of us in here, aren't there? So, if you give it some thought, there is no reason whatsoever why you should repeatedly tell me what my name is. I know why you're doing it. Dominance. This was a lifelong bugbear for Joshua. I may not be too clever, Lovesang, but you don't have to be clever to work out what the rules are. For a while, there was nothing but the repeated crackling of the false fire. Later, Joshua came to understand that if there was a pause in a conversation with Lobsang, it was for effect. At the clock speeds he worked at, Lobsang could answer any question a fraction of a second after you asked it, yet after the equivalent of a lifetime of contemplation.
"You know, we are like-minded, you and I, my friend," said Lobsang.
"Let's stick to acquaintance for now."
Lobsang laughed. "Of course. I stand corrected. Or rather, float in a disembodied way corrected. But I would like to become your friend, because in the abstract, in any given situation, I believe that both of us are interested in finding out, above all, what the rules are. And I believe that you are a remarkably valuable individual. You are smart enough, Joshua. You couldn't have survived so much time out alone in the long earth, otherwise. Oh, there are certainly others smarter than you. They are stacked high in the universities, achieving little or nothing. But smart has to have a depth as well as a length. Some smart brushes over a problem, and some smart grinds exceeding slow, like the mills of God. And it grinds fine. And when it comes up with an answer, it has been tested. That's how it is with you, Joshua."
Lobsang laughed again.
"And by the way, my laughter is not a recording. Each laugh is a unique product of the moment, demonstrably different from any other laugh I have ever emitted. That was a laugh just for you. I was human, you know. I still am. Joshua, let's get to know one another. I want to help you. And of course, I want you to help me. I cannot think of a better person to go with me on the expedition I am planning, which will involve some very far stepping indeed. I think it might rather appeal to you. You like to be far from the maddening crowd, Joshua, don't you?"
Thomas Hardy's title was about the madding crowd.
"Oh, of course it was. But it is a good idea for me to make the odd little slip, not to appear all-knowing every now and again."
Joshua was growing impatient with this clumsy seduction. "Lobsang, how are you going to help me?"
"I know that what happened to the Congressional Expedition was not your fault. I can prove it."
Now they were getting down to brass tacks, Joshua thought. "The assholes," he said.
"Oh yes, assholes," said Lobsang. "And thusly you described them to the Preliminary Board of Inquiry. An unknown species of primate resembling a particularly unpleasant carnivorous baboon. But I suspect the Linnaean Society will not approve your appellation. Assholes."
"I didn't kill those men. Sure, I can get along without people, but I had no reason to kill anybody. Did you read the report?" "Those ass..."
"Can we stick to baboons, please, Joshua? It looks better on the transcript."
It had been a paid jaunt for Joshua, a gig arranged by his old friend Officer Jansen. "You've grown up while I've grown old, Joshua," she said. "And now I've got you some government work. You'll be a kind of bodyguard and guide." It was an official journey to the far west worlds with a party of scientists, lawyers, and a congressman, accompanied by a platoon of soldiers. It had ended in slaughter. The scientists had been gathering data, The lawyers had been taking photographs of the congressman setting foot on one world after another, making a kind of visual claim to the stepwise Americas, in order to establish, symbolically, the aegis of the datum federal government. The soldiers complained about the food and the state of their feet. Joshua had been happy enough to help the party for his fee, but sensible enough to make sure his ability to step without a box and without after effects was concealed. So he carried a potion consisting of sour milk and diced vegetables that would pass muster as vomit, the product of stepping nausea. After all, who was going to look too closely? It all worked fine. They had all bitched, squabbled, and complained their way through 2,000 Earths, and after every step, Joshua faked nausea with splashes of ersatz vomit. And then the murderous attack had come. They were apes, something like baboons, but smarter, more vicious. Superboons, some of the scientists had called them. Assholes, Joshua had decided, watching their pink butts go bobbing into the distance after he'd driven them off. Or anyhow, that was his story of what had become of the party. The trouble was, there had been no witnesses to back him up, and it had all happened too far out for an expedition to be sent to investigate, so far. The damn things could plan an attack. They never bothered me after I killed two of them, but the troops were overwhelmed, and the science guys never knew how to defend themselves worth a damn.
And you left the bodies for the baboons?
You know, it's hard to dig a grave with a wooden shovel in one hand while holding a plastic gun in the other. I burned the camp and got the hell out of there.
I thought the Board of Inquiry's tentative verdict was rather unfair on you. It left doubt. Now I want you to know that I can prove that what you said was true. I can prove that there is an outcrop of black rock about a kilometre from the campsite, by the waterhole, just as you said, behind which still lies the remains of the corpse of the alpha animal which you shot. Incidentally, the rock was low-grade coal.
How can you know all this?
I retraced your steps. The records you returned were quite accurate. I went back, Joshua.
You went back? When?
Yesterday.
You got back yesterday?
Lobsang said patiently, I went and returned yesterday.
You couldn't have done. It's impossible to step that fast.
So you say, Joshua. You'll find out in due course. You did make an attempt to cover the corpses with stones, and you left grave markers, just as you mentioned at the inquiry. I brought back photographic records, proof of what you said, you see. In fact, I reconstructed the whole thing. I used pheromone trails, checked angles of fire, the lie of the bodies. I found every bullet. And, of course, I took DNA samples. I even brought back the alpha skull, and the bullet that killed it. It all fits with your testimony. None of the soldiers put up an effective defense when your asshole baboons attacked, did they? The superboons are maniacs by the standards of the animal world. Appallingly aggressive. But I don't think they would have attacked if one of the grunts hadn't got nervy and fired first.
Joshua squirmed with embarrassment. If you checked all this out, you know I crapped my pants in the course of the engagement.
Should I think less of you for that? Throughout the animal kingdom, it has always made good sense to jettison the cargo in a threatening situation. All battlefields attest to that, as does every soaring songbird. But then, you came back, and stabbed one of the superboons in the brain, and drove off the rest, stopping only when you'd shot the leader dead. You came back. And that excuses a lot.
Joshua thought for a moment. Okay, that's leverage, all right. You can clear me, but why do you want to recruit me in the first place?
Well, we discussed that. It's the same reason Jansen suggested you for Congressman Popper's party in the first place. You have Daniel Boone syndrome, Joshua. Very rare. You don't need people. You quite like people, at least some people. But the absence of people does not worry you. That's going to be very useful where we're going. I don't expect to meet too many other human beings once the expedition is underway. Your assistance would be of great help to me, because of that quality. You are able to focus. You're not distracted by the extraordinary isolation of the long Earth. And, as Officer Jansen saw from the beginning, your unique stepping talent, your ability to step unaided and, more important, to recover quickly from each step, will be useful if trouble strikes, as it surely will. The rewards to you, should you agree to accompany me, will be excessively generous and tailored to your particular preferences. Among them will be an authoritative account of the massacre of the congressional investigators, totally exonerating you, which will be received by the authorities on the day we depart.
Am I worth that much? Lobsang laughed again.
Joshua, what is worth? What is value now, when gold is valued simply for its luster, because every man can have a gold mine for himself? Property? The physics of the long Earth means that every one of us can have a world entirely to himself if he so wishes. This is the new age, Joshua, and there will be new values, new ideas of worth, including love, cooperation, truth, and above all, yes, indeed, above all, the friendship of Lobsang. You should listen to me, Joshua Valiente. I intend to travel to the ends of the earth. No, to the ends of the long earth. And I want you with me. Will you come?
Joshua sat there, staring at nothing. Do you know, the crackling of your fire now sounds absolutely random.
Yes. Easy enough to fix. I thought it might put you a little more at your ease.
So if I come with you, you'll get that congressional review off my back?
Yes, certainly, I promise.
And if I don't choose to go with you, what then?
I'll deal with the review nonetheless. You did everything you could have done, I believe, and the loss of those people was definitely not your fault. Evidence of this will be presented to the panel.
Joshua stood up. Right answer. That night, Joshua sat in front of a screen in the home and read up about Lobsang. Apparently, so it was believed, Lobsang resided in extremely high-density, fast-access computer storage at MIT, and therefore not in the premises of Trans-Earth at all. When Joshua read that, he felt a warm certainty that whatever was in a super-cool box in MIT, it wasn't Lobsang, not the whole of Lobsang. If Lobsang was smart, and he was most surely smart, he would have got himself distributed everywhere, a hedge against an off switch, and he'd be in a position where nobody could command him, not even his super-powerful partner, Douglas Black. There was somebody who knew the rules, Joshua thought. Joshua switched off the screen. Another rule. Sister Agnes held it as a matter of faith that all left on computer screens exploded sooner or later. He sat back in the silence and thought. Was Lobsang human, or an AI aping humanity? A smiley, he thought. One curve and two dots, and you see a human face. What was the minimum you needed to see a human being? What has to be said? What has to be laughed? After all, people are made of nothing but clay, well, metaphorically, although Joshua was not too good at metaphors, seeing them as a kind of trick. And you had to admit that Lobsang was pretty good at knowing what Joshua was thinking, just as a perceptive human would be. Maybe the only significant difference between a really smart simulation and a human being was the noise they made when you punched them. But the ends of the long Earth. Was there an end? People were saying there must be a whole circle of Earths, because the stepper box took you either east or west, and everybody believed that east must meet west. But nobody knew. Nobody knew what all the other Earths were doing out there in the first place. Perhaps it was time somebody tried to find out. Joshua looked down at the latest stepper box he had just finished, using a double-pole, double-throw switch he had bought over the internet. Sitting on the desk beside him, it was red and silver and looked very professional, unlike his first box, which had utilized a switch taken off Sister Regina's elderly stair lift. He had carried a stepper ever since it had dawned on him that, since he did not know how he stepped, the sensible thing would be to carry a stepper box anyway. A talent that had come suddenly and inexplicably might just as easily disappear the same way. And besides, a box was cover. He didn't want to stand out from the stepping crowd. Turning the box over in his hands, Joshua wondered if Lobsang realized what was the most interesting thing about stepper box construction. He'd noticed it on step day, and it was obvious when you thought about it. It was a strange little detail nobody seemed to think was important. Joshua always thought that details were important. Officer Jansen noticed details like this. It had to do with following the instructions. A stepper would only work for you if you built it yourself, or at least finished its assembly. He drummed his fingers on the box. He could go with Lobsang, or not. Joshua was 28 years old. He didn't have to ask anybody's permission. But he did have the damn congressional review hanging over him. And he always liked the idea of being out of reach. Despite Jansen's promises all those years ago, the bad guys had got to him once or twice. There had been that trouble not long after step day, when men with badges had pushed their way into the home and tried to send him to sleep so they could take him away, and Sister Agnes had laid one of them out with a tire iron. And pretty soon the cops were called, and that meant Officer Jansen showed up. And then the mayor had got involved, and it turned out that one of the kids who were helped by Joshua on step day had been his son. And that had been that. The three black anonymous cars had hightailed it out of town. That was when the rule was laid down that if anyone wanted to talk to Joshua, then they had to talk to Officer Jansen first. Joshua was not the problem, the mayor had said. The problem was crime and escapes from jails and no security left in the world. Joshua, the city council was told, was perhaps a little strange, but also marvellously gifted, and, as was testified by Officer Jansen, had already been of great help to the Madison Police Department. That was the official position. But that wasn't always much comfort to Joshua himself, who hated being looked at, who hated the fact that a growing number of people knew he was different, whether they thought he was a problem or not. In recent years, Joshua had stepped alone, going further and further into the long earth, far beyond the Robinson Crusoe stockades he'd built as a teenager, out to worlds so remote he didn't have to worry about the crazies, even the crazies with badges and warrants. And when they did come, he just stepped away again. By the time they had finished throwing up, Joshua could be 100 worlds away. Though sometimes he stepped back to tie their bootlaces together while they barfed. You had to have something to entertain yourself. Longer and longer jaunts, further and further away. He called these his sabbaticals, a way of getting away from the crowds and from the odd pressure in his head when he was back on Datum Earth, or even the low earths nowadays, a pressure that got in the way of listening to the silence. So he was strange. But the sisters said that the whole world was getting stranger. Sister Georgina had told him as much in her polite English accent.
Joshua, you may be just a little ahead of the rest of the human race, and I imagine the first Homo sapiens felt the way you do when you look at the rest of us with our stepper boxes and our vomiting. Like H-Sap, wondering why the other chaps take such a long time to string two syllables together.
But Joshua wasn't sure if he liked the idea of being different, even if it was different in a superior sort of way. Still, he liked Sister Georgina almost as much as Sister Agnes. Sister Georgina read Keats and Wordsworth and Ralph Waldo Emerson to him. Sister Georgina has studied at Cambridge, or, as she put it, not the one in Massachusetts, Cambridge University, the real one, you know, in England. Sometimes it occurred to Joshua that the nuns who ran the home were not like the ones that he saw on television. When he asked Sister Georgina about that, she laughed and said,
"Maybe it's because we are just like you, Joshua. We're here because we didn't quite fit anywhere else."
He was going to miss them all, he realized, when he went travelling with Lobsang. Somehow, the decision had made itself.